to Piercing the Veil on bbsradio.com with your hosts Jordan and Corey, and new guests appearing weekly. During the show, Jordan and Corey will pierce the many veils of illusion to reveal the universal truths and tools for negotiation inherent to success in one's daily life, including but not limited to 1. Multidimensional wordsmithing. 2. Mastering and commanding negotiations. 3. Constructive trust and wealth preservation. And 4. Spirituality. Pierce the veil, and the truth will reveal itself.
Okay, hello world. Welcome back to another episode of Piercing the Veil. Today is Sunday, May 8th. This is also known to some as Mother's Day. So take that for what you will. Corey, how's it going today?
Great. Had a great little hang with Mother on Mother's Day.
Yeah, I know you had texted me you were driving. I figured you were coming back from the city or somewhere visiting your mother.
Yes, exactly. So it's good, man. Everything's good. Another beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Nice, nice. Well, listeners, if you were just joining us last week, we spoke about alternative energy. We went a little bit into that, promised you a little bit of a follow-up as well. We also promised a follow-up to sex magic. I have also been asked to do a call-in show by a number of people, so I'm going to heed their concerns and their requests, and that's what we're going to do this week. And if we do have time, in the middle of that, while we're talking back and forth, Corey, I'd like to touch on some alternative energy points, some follow-up points.
Nice. Yo, check this out, though.
What do you got?
I have a quote from Nikola Tesla, or it's been attributed to him. And I got to preface that it could open up a can of worms on another subject, which has become extremely popular lately, which maybe we could touch on another show. But I'm just going to read the quote, and you might be able to ascertain what I'm talking about. But it's very interesting what he has to say. All right.
Go right ahead.
All right. Earth is a realm. It is not a planet. It is not an object. Therefore, it has no edge. Earth would be more easily defined as a system environment. Earth is also a machine. It is a Tesla coil. The sun and moon are powered wirelessly with the electromagnetic field, the ether. This field also suspends the celestial spheres with electromagnetic levitation. Electromagnetic levitation disproves gravity because the only force you need to counter is the electromagnetic force, not gravity. The stars are attached to the firmament. Nikola Tesla.
That's mind blown. Yeah,
what?
That has been attributed to him. Yeah, I think he's touching on a number of different points, I should say, within that whole quote. So the firmament has been referred to in religious texts, and some people see it as some sort of bubble or veil, oddly enough, or something like that. I would, in this manner that he's describing it, I would postulate that he's actually describing what's known as dark matter, or the substrate of the universe. Which is held in firmament.
Right.
And then also, he touches on the electrogravitic truth or reality to what gravity really is. Now, I still use gravity as a term because it's very easily available to understand for most people, especially those who have studied Einsteinian physics, if you will. And the belief that gravity is actually just a manifestation of electromagnetism is something that's been dear to me my whole life. You know, I've always just known that instinctually. So what he's saying is that the control of the electromagnetic field is really what's essential to control the many different aspects or varied concepts that we're talking about when we go into physics. So you're always looking for this underlying control factor. Where does this come from? What's causing this? How does it work? And he's talking about the ether, which is a constant force, which is always coming back and forth out of the interdimensional realm, if you will, or the non-physical reality, the virtual particles with the physical particles and anti-ions and anti-neutrons and protons and so on and so forth. I think that's what he's getting into. He's encompassing everything with that quote. So mm-hmm. that was fantastic. I mean, that's, you could really analyze that for a whole show if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, I just came upon that recently, man. Kind of blew my mind.
I really appreciate that. That was fantastic. Yeah, so, I mean, right then and there, there's a follow-up to alternative energy. Anybody who is listening to the show, you can take a look at that. Also, we did speak about hydrogen gas. Which, again, I said that was my favorite. It's one of the big things I'm looking into right now. The hydrogen gas is just so versatile. You can use it for so many different things. You do have to be extremely careful. It can be extremely flammable in certain conditions. You have to take a lot of precautions. But if those precautions are met, you will have a wonderful time experimenting with this type of gas. Obviously, all the warranty and the liability is upon yourself. Listeners, if you're going to be doing any types of experiments, please look after yourself and your local environment. But for the most part, you can go anywhere with this. For example, I have recently done some research since last week into a phenomenon that I mentioned on a previous radio show, which was burning chicken feathers or burning feathers at a certain degree in a kiln for a certain time, and then your result is some sort of tar, right? A little tar or doping substance that you can dope your solar panels with, and then you can have your solar panels enclosed with water and then pump in hydrogen dioxide, carbon dioxide, right, with the hydrogen gas. Or you can fill it in at a later time down the line. And what happens is you're able to produce methanol as a result. And as most people know, methanol is very similar to the forms of ethanol and gasoline that are refined today. You can put it right in your car. Bing, bang, boom, no conversions necessary, no expensive, you know, diesel conversion kit or biodiesel or electric or any of this stuff. You just put it right in your tank. Maybe you might want to put some sort of conditioner or fuel conditioner in there as well. But there you go. Now you've got free fuel made from sun, water, and carbon dioxide.
Mm.
So that's really something I'm going to be playing around with when we make this finalized purchase on our land.
Yeah. You know, that's the interesting thing to me about the whole water car, if you will, thing as well. And that people have been having success with it without significant modification to the internal combustion engine, right? Meaning, so, you know, there's fuel alternatives without the huge cost of technology improvements and equipment and so on and so forth. So the whole idea of kind of retrofitting or reusing existing technology or machinery, coming at it from a different perspective, is really appealing to me as well. It makes a lot of economic sense.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, you gotta be real careful with what you're doing. Be very deliberate. Make sure that you're not upsetting, you know, the local power structure until you're implanted fully with what you're intending to do. What I mean by that is, you know, there's a lot of electric companies that are going to be put out of business if you start doing this on your land and your neighbors ask you, "Hey, what's this?" Right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you're smart, you're going to be free sourcing it, and you're going to be, you know, not taking on liability. So you could say, well, hey, I did it like this, this, and this. If you choose to do it, it's on you, but it's pretty darn simple, and here's the materials where I found, you know, a majority of my project needs. It's this location right here for these materials, and you can put them together in a day, yada, 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 here you go. And if that person does it, well, great, and it works, and then the next neighbor's like, oh, hey, what are you guys doing? And then it just grows.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a natural organic form of disassociation from the electrical grid or, you know, basic oil industry consumption. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily a direct threat. Yeah, you can go around and threaten the oil industries and do this and do that, but you're going to play big fish, small fish, and see who eats who, right?
Right, right.
A lot of these inventors are trying to bump their head against the wall underwater, and they keep bumping their head, boom, 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 boom. How do I make it big with this energy? And then along comes the big fish, like, and then bye-bye little fish.
Yeah, so it's almost as if the profit motive is so integrally entwined with the existing energy structures that moving away from the profit motive is almost part and parcel to making room for these new technologies, open source, as you say, stuff like that. I mean, I know there's people out there who are selling devices and things, but, I think Stanley Meyer got himself into trouble with his, 2-hour self-promotion film where he, was claiming to be able to take out the petroleum industry. And so,
if you get too loud,
right,
you might get silenced.
Right, right. So keep it private or keep it open source. These guys thrive off of competition, and they'll do whatever it takes to maintain their hegemony. So, just a word of advice, work around that stuff. Don't try to get rich off of your new inventions or compete with the powers that be, because that typically doesn't turn out too well.
Yeah, or do, but do it responsibly in a way where you can give away the plans for free, right, open source, or you can build things under private contract for somebody here and there and still make a little bit of cash, whatever you need to do.
Right, just, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Go
ahead.
Yeah, I'm not saying to just give all your stuff away. But don't announce it way out in front and think you're going to take down the Titans. That's be cool with it. Be smart with it. Use it to your advantage. Share it with people so they can use it to their advantage. And in my assessment, the success will come out of the, one individual at a time who takes on these endeavors or these technologies and so forth.
Yes, and then it builds into a community, then it builds into a county, then it builds into a state, and you just basically show a whole bunch of people successively a better way to do it. Hey, Joe Bob, this is how I'm doing it, bro. If you want to, continue doing it the way you're doing it and be in the system, good on you. Keep doing that, but I'm not going to participate. So if you ever change your mind, I'm right here. That's the best way to do it. We've said that many times. So,
right.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, we've touched on alternative energy within the first 10 minutes of our show. We'll touch a little bit on sex magic, wrap that up. And guys, if you're calling in, don't think that you have to be topic specific. I welcome any comment, suggestion, question, anything like that. We're very laid back. We are by the seat of our pants most of the time, very flowing and organic in our nature. So we have covered a couple of these topics before, and we're doing the follow-up now. But we're just mixing it in so everybody has the best of both worlds and everybody gets what they want. So I actually think we have a caller on now. Let's go ahead and go to our first caller. No. Okay. Looks like that was a false alarm. So we'll get a little bit into sex magic. How about that, Corey?
Yes. Speaking of energy.
Yeah, we're talking about energy. Let's bring it on a personal level. We did speak about that about 3 weeks ago, I believe, and we didn't really have time to get into the mechanics of what I was wanting to share. If you're listening to the show, I'm going to presume that you know what sex is. You've either participated or seen what that is about, okay? So there are some basics that you just already know. What I want to focus on is the climax. That's a real important thing. There are a lot of practices or doctrines that make a lot of importance or put a important scope, if you will, on the leading up to the climax and prolonging that as long as possible. Yes, that's okay. That's great. That's called Tantra. There's a lot of other things involved with that. What I'm talking about is instant practical solutions. I'm not talking about months later, you haven't had sex and you're building up all this sex energy and you don't know what to do with it. When you finally do release it, you release it to, a whole bunch of interdimensional entities that have been waiting for you to pop off for months because you don't know where to direct it to. And all of that was just a waste, and you just powered up the system 20 times because you did Tantra. Whoop-de-doo. Good job, guy. If it works for you, great. What I'm talking about is in the moment, practical, present tense, instant solutions, instant manifestation. So again, speaking specifically about climax, the goal, obviously, is to utilize that energy in the moment in the best way you can. And then with a partner, you want to utilize both of your energies at the same time in the best way. So the swirling of energy, swirling and feeling the field of energy around you, swirling with your partner and that coming around you, and as you both build up. Obviously, it's probably going to be easier for the man to learn how to wait longer than the woman to, you know, learn how to go quicker. You both can meet in the middle somewhere. And when the woman goes off, then you can go ahead and release as soon as you can at that point. And that's essentially the same time, because they're going to be experiencing waves and different levels, while you, on the other hand, as a masculine counterpart, would be coming off extremely quickly and just one powerful shot, usually. Okay, there might be some exceptions. Good for you if that's the case. But at that moment, there's two things. There's a physical component. You want to move the energy away from the sexual organ. Most people will feel the climax in the sexual organ, in the testicular region, and then also in the lower abdomen, right there in the pubic bone area. Now, the trick or the key is to, in the testicular region, when you're feeling that, you want to move that up the insides of your legs and then down your legs and out your feet. Okay, so what I mean by that is obviously your testicles are not attached to your inside of your thighs. They have to go up and come up into your pelvic region to access the main arteries and the main energy channels that are present. So you need to shoot that through those energy channels and immediately shunt it downwards so it doesn't go up into your stomach. Now, at the same time, the energy that you feel while you're climaxing above in the pelvic region, above the sex organ, you'll want to send that straight up the chest, through the ribs to the back, and then up the spine. So what I mean by that is it comes up the chest, around the ribs, it comes down through the kidneys, and then goes straight up your spine out of your head. Mm. It sounds like a lot to remember, but if you can just visualize it a couple times before you even start the act itself, it will come instinctually to you. And if you shoot this, it's like a pulsar, Corey. Have you ever seen a picture of a pulsar, which is mm-hmm. a certain type of star that's emitting huge, you know, plasma beams and proton beams from either end? Yeah, it's like that. And what's going to happen is the energy will go to the top and the bottom of your energy fields. When I say you, I mean you and your partner. And the swirling that you've started will mix the energy together. And then once you've done that, you'll feel it. You're in the moment, you're having your orgasm, and then as you're doing that, all of this instantaneously, you want to shoot it out. So expand that energy field or the sexual energy out of your energy field personally, out of your aura, if you will, and shoot that out into the universe as big as you can. And then the second part is to collapse it and make a impulse bubble that comes through your soul. So it just collapses right in and goes through your soul and then back in. Now that returns the manifestation intent back to you to where you're in control of it and you can align yourself. You have sort of like a beacon towards the reality you're looking for. Mm. Say, for example, let's just take something basic that most people don't understand. I want to make more money, and I'm going to use sex magic to do it. So in that moment, I did everything you said, Jordan, and I sent it out into the universe, right? And let's just say they didn't hear about the impulse bubble. Mm-hmm. I sent it out into the universe, right? And it came back in a little bit, but it took months. Mm. So I had a few results, but it took months. Well, what that is you're not aligned with the energy properly because you haven't connected it intrinsically back to your manifest intent in your soul. So you've sent the universe, the outward universe, hey, this is what I want. And it's sort of like letting it happen to you in the way that's natural for the universe and not necessarily for your personal intent. So by doing the impulse bubble and bringing it back into you, not only have you affected all the physics and the surrounding area and realities and dimensions and whittled away the realities where you're not making more money, but now the best, most efficient, fastest reality that will show up to you the quickest is available to you because you have a beacon. You've impulse bubbled it back into your soul, right? And you have a beacon of light where you can now align your vibration to the one specific reality that you really want, which is, okay, make money now easily and not have to do much, you know, extra work, stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm glad you touched on that part. The intention that goes along with all of that energetic work with one and one's partner. Talk about it with your partner. Have a mutual intention.
Yeah, so discussion beforehand is obviously important. So those were the mechanics that we didn't get to touch on last time. And then obviously you got to discuss this either with yourself, you don't have to talk to yourself, but know, have a good idea of what you're doing, or with a partner, fully discuss what's happening.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, you know, I'm glad you touched on Tantra. There's, you know, there's all kinds of stuff out there. I happen to know a little bit about the Taoist stuff. There's a guy named, Mantak Chia, who, has written a whole lot and has a lot of information about, you know, developing the sex powers and its relationship to the chi and relationship to the field and so forth. There's all kinds of stuff out there. You know, I encourage people to investigate and to make their own, to make their own, journey and exploration and stuff. You know, yeah, yeah. The Tantra is kind of the Tantra is kind of funny though, because you know, I've messed with it, and unless you're 100% committed to that, yeah. If you if you're just building up all of this energy and it's just kind of you're not really doing anything with it, it's gonna want to bust out somehow, and then you know. The tendency just to go back to, I don't know, normal sexual practice, where the kind of dispersing or randomly dispersing of energy and substance, yeah, will bust out like you said, and other people will gobble it up. I think that's in the Bible. Aside from. You know, they were trying to build a nation, right? So it was very important that the seed not get wasted.
That's right.
In that regard. But also, I think, what was it? Who was the guy? Who's the guy who was chastised for pulling out of his wife or and busting?
Oh.
And,
yes.
What was his name?
It escapes me, Corey, but I know what you're talking about. All these silly little repressions and dysfunctions will prevent most people from being in a state where they're open enough to try these types of things. Because
right.
The sex act, in my experience or observation, I should say, for most people who haven't truly opened themselves up and discussed with their partner, is for the most part, it's repressed. It's very stiff. It's very certain few parameters. We don't talk. Don't look at me that way while you're doing that. You know,
It's mechanics. A lot of mechanics involved.
Mechanics, exactly.
Hey, dude, I think we got a call, man.
Yep, we do. That's our first caller. Let's go ahead and take that. And we'll go from there. Welcome, caller. How can I help you?
I was just calling. I missed the first 10 minutes of your show. Touch on what you were just talking about on your you know, sex magic and everything else. How do you stop yourself from repressing that kind of stuff? What's some different ways that you can, you know, overcome, you know, repressing the sexual energy that, you know, you're taught as a child to repress?
Well, one of those things is to maintain the breathing. I know that sounds very, you know, new agey, but it's extremely simple. If you can maintain your breathing while you're having your orgasm, the thoughts won't rush in. So normally there's thoughts that rush in before orgasm, and then you have the orgasm. It's that pure, blissful moment of no thought for most people.
Yeah.
And then the thoughts rush in again. So in the time before and after, you're going to have those preconceived notions and judgments. If you concentrate on the breathing on the way up, you get to the point where you have no thoughts anyways, and you prevented the thoughts from coming in by focusing on the breathing. Then, in that moment, while you're having the orgasm, then you allow a conscious thought or conscious intent, and then do the mechanisms that I was telling you and the listeners. And then afterwards, the thoughts are easily controllable, and you won't even think about the preconceptions or the ideas or repressions, because you will have experienced this fresh, clean, divine, neutral for some people, energy release, and it will be predicated upon how focused you are on the breath before you come up, and that's how you stop yourself from it. For most people, and for myself, that's how it assists me into remaining thoughtless until the moment I need to think that thought during the in the climax.
Okay. Because I had remember, or I remember, you know, having this conversation with you before at one time when I had called, you know, for advice.
Oh, is this Brad?
You know, I've, yes.
Okay. But, how's it going?
Going good. And I always end up having, like, the blocks, like the mental blocks that you just grow up with as kids, you know, like as kids, you know, you're taught that, you know, this is wrong or this is wrong. And like, it always just like something will pop up in my head and it's like, just throws off the, you know, what I'm trying to, you know, not necessarily accomplish, but, you know, it perverted, you know, like that kind
exactly.
of thing.
Yeah. No, I know what you're talking about. And also be aware of this, listeners, every thought is not your own. You are vibrating and operating on a vibrational frequency, which is shared by a lot of different entities, constructs, artificial intelligence programs and software things and negative energy, forcible feedings and stuff like that that's being shoved into the Earth's ley lines and the surrounding area that your body is locally in. So most of your thoughts are yours, yes. But again, even those are influenced by your worldviews and your perceptions and things that were foisted upon you as a child. So take a look at that for what it is. And then a few thoughts may not be yours. And they always come, in my experience, at the worst or most inopportune times or the weakest times. So like what you're talking about, Brad, is you might have some weird-ass thought that's like, dude, that's totally not me. I would never think that. Why did that happen now? Mm. Well, because it could throw you off the most. Because sexual energy... conscious sexual energy is the most powerful agent for change, I believe, in the non-physical realm to affect this physical realm. So obviously there's meditation and all these other techniques and things like that that people tend to do on their own. But if you were to organize a group, maybe, and this is just a hypothetical, where around the world people and their partners would have sex at the same time for a common purpose, when they climax they would think about the same thing, or maybe have their own personal aspects tied to it, but a general purpose or theme to manifest a change in the direct reality of this planet, I guarantee you, you'll start seeing some changes instantly. Right? That's something that anybody can pick up. So to come back to your question, Brad, I think that if you need a little extra help, if you need a little extra help, then what you would need to do is maybe take some psychedelics, a small microdose, if your partner is okay with that, or in solo practice, or perhaps do a little meditation or other techniques. Again, you still want to focus and center on the breathing, and that might actually push you over the edge to where it blocks out those types of thoughts. Maybe you're a soul, Brad, that's extremely powerful when you have sex, right? So you might be affected the most and be targeted the most automatically. I'm not saying there's some group or entity, you know, swirling around looking for people that produce the most energy when they're having sex. Hey, there might be for other reasons. But what I'm saying is it could be that you are a very powerful entity, and the way that you express or manifest could shake up this world in a way that the controlling structure doesn't want you to. So, again, that might be a part of your issue, or it could be a number of different things. Two things for you, Brad. Deep breathing, focus on it, and if you need a little extra help, I would recommend that you maybe get into the psychedelics in any way that you could. Obviously, that's religious use. You know, I don't condone somebody to, you know, for selling drugs or anything classified as a drug. But if you want to put it in your body of your own accord and you don't hurt anybody else, that's your own damn business.
Can I let me speak to your question too, Brad, for a second? It's kind of weird, the whole let's say Christianity, their whole take on sexuality and sex. You know, for as far as I can tell, they've been hiding the power of sex for the energetic benefits, the spiritual benefits, the transformational benefits, and so forth. And that's always been secret, kind of esoteric knowledge. And so they're kind of telling the truth that without that knowledge or without that kind of practice, the spiritual practice, in the sexual act, it can be considered a lesser act or a baser act, or Oh, Onan. Onan was the guy from the Bible. Onanism.
That's right.
Like just randomly spilling seed and so on and so forth. So, yeah, they say masturbation is bad, but they don't give you the science behind why masturbation is, why it would be considered not good, right? Meaning, more often than not, you're wasting your life force. When you ejaculate, there's a life force that goes with that ejaculate that stays and surrounds the sperm as they travel and meet with the egg and form this new life form. And so if you're just...
Electromagnetics.
Yeah, it's electromagnetic. So if you're just wasting that, yeah, that will, and the Taoists do say the same thing. If you're just wasting that, you're wasting your life essence. So in some respects, they're telling the truth that, animalistic base sex is not that constructive or not that positive, but they say sex is bad, period. Meanwhile, they have all of the knowledge and science that they're operating with that they withhold from the general public. So, every great lie has a kernel of truth in it. So in terms of any kind of negative thoughts or shameful thoughts or whatever shit that pops up about the sexual act, just know that if your intent is to create something beneficial, positive, divine in the process, then that's going to, then that's going to take you far. All right.
Intent that's was a great word on that part, yes.
Yeah, that's
thank you
that's
for that, Corey. That actually touches on the personal aspect for him when he's by himself. Whether you're with a partner or by yourself, that's all of that applies. And again, the energy thing is something that the Taoists really get into. They're like, don't waste your life force, yada yada yada. Press on the lower part. I forget what it's called. It's the gooch area in between the anus and the scrotum.
The perineum.
Perineum. You press on that during climax to recycle the actual substances back into your bloodstream and your body to recycle the life energy. Well, there's exceptions to anything. So if your intent is to manifest more physical energy for yourself and you ejaculate a little bit of it and you get back 10 times the amount by doing that with a sex magic back into your body from the ether, well, you can also do that as well. Right? It's all negotiable. Mm-hmm. So this is an excellent point. Thank you so much. I think we have Daisy on line 3. We'll go ahead and bring her on. Hello, Daisy.
Stacy.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi. Okay, how are you guys? I'm loving the show. Thank you so much for talking about sex magic, as you call it. I like it. There's a lot that's been said. You're pretty deep, so I'm just going to go with, I guess, my personal feelings for this.
Sure.
Okay, cool. Like, I've seen, sex as a healing now. Like, I practice it with the intention of healing. For me, I was a survivor of sexual abuse, and so, my intention has always been to direct the energy towards healing. And then through the practice of Tantra and work with a partner, breath work, and things such as eye gazing, I've come to a place where I can open myself up. The direction of the energy, as I heard you describe it earlier, Jordan, I believe I've heard it called onking before.
Yes.
Kind of creating that onk of energy around and bursting it through. I really like the way that you talked about projecting it and just shooting it, into the cosmos, into the universe as your intention. But bringing that in through the contraction of the perineum, and every time you do that, almost acting as the cosmic breath and the cosmic, give and release, and realize that you are always in a constant state of orgasm. You're always in a constant state of releasing and giving, and it turns into this energetic ecstasy almost that you can use as a medication, a light, a healing. All over yourself, and I just feel I just want to say grateful that you're sharing this message to so many people, grateful that you have this conversation with others, grateful for my partner who practices, with me, and, to guide me through this process. I'm given a lot of hope to hear the masculine speaking in such a way, because it is by the masculine that I was harmed, you know, in my experience. So, I just to call in and say I'm inspired.
Likewise, Daisy, I really appreciate you sharing that perspective, that aspect, you know, coming from the feminine aspect of having some experience that shifted your perception and having to come around for full circle using the same energy that you ascribe towards the harm, right? And I really think that if you have an open discussion with your partner, which I'm sure, by the way you're talking, that you do regularly, and you really describe in detail, it might be uncomfortable, but describe in detail the actual feelings. Like, I know it was wrong because of this, and why, you know, obviously the physical factors of this happening against my will, that obviously is a horrible main part of why I felt bad and have these feelings, and it was a negative experience and a horrible, you know, I can't describe your experience for you, but I hope you understand where I'm going with that. You have that level of it. And if you can actually get into why it made you feel that way. Oh, well, because I had no control. Oh, well, because I felt powerless. Oh, because it was somebody I trusted. You know, those types of comprehensive aspects, and then speak those to your partner, so that you can utilize even further the techniques that will allow you to break those energies down. You really want to drill down and dissolve like acid or a loving, you know, bubbles, you know, surrounding all the negative dark energy during the act itself, and have both of you be focused on visualizing these types of, I guess, machines to break down the structures of the energy that you've already built up from your experience. I don't know if that makes complete sense, but what I'm trying to say is, yes, there was some physical trauma. You can work through that, and it sounds like you're doing that. But describing to your partner exactly how it made you feel, and then him having that knowledge while you guys are doing the act itself, and countering it with the exact opposite of what that is. Does it make sense? And then utilizing the eye gazing to make that happen. But you guys really, like, drill down through it. You might start crying. He might start crying. You know, the energy will come up, but you need to totally target it. And then at the moment of climax, a refreshing, like a wave of water energy is what I would suggest that you imagine. Water, cooling water rushing in after you sent it out to the universe, and it's been cleansed, and the water is charged with all the cosmos, and it comes back in and erases all of the negative energy and wipes out that account. You zero out that account forever, and you never have to put any more work towards it ever again. And maybe some psychedelics.
So beautiful and extremely insightful, Jordan. I thank you so much for sharing that with me. Yeah, that brought up a lot for me, honestly, just hearing you say, like, you know, I felt out of control. Like, I didn't, you know, for so long I never talked to anyone about that, it even happening. And once I started to do that, I started to realize, okay, there's a wound here, like, and I need to, like, express this more often. But I've never really given myself, you know, the space to look at my feelings about it. Like, I guess just, like, it didn't come naturally because nobody had held that space other than this partner that I felt safe enough to open up in this way with. And so, you know, it's really beautiful that you talk about anchoring down, like, all the way into the root, drilling, you know, in and pouring acid into the cracks to just alleviate, you know, at the root instead of just chopping off the little limbs and branches. Like, I'm all about that. But I realize that that is an extremely vulnerable place to drop down into. But, I mean, that is healing, you know. And like you said, crying, releasing, expressing, like, that is healing. And that's what we signed up to do here, you know. That's what we kind of to do here as beings and people, is to, you know, to get through this. And so thank you for helping me get through this, for, you know, guiding me so that I can be in better flow with my partner and, you know, vice versa. So, hey, man,
absolutely.
May this ripple out right into this.
Likewise, the thanks is there on you as well for sharing that perspective. I mean, it's just, Corey, do you have anything to share on that? I know it's when it touches the masculine on our part, it sort of triggers something in me, at least, of what it really feels like to be on the feminine side. You know, when you hear a story like that, what do you think? What are your thoughts?
Well, what's coming to me is like the role of, I've been the guy in a partnership and in a coitus, if you will, in a union with someone who has, you know, negative affiliations with the sexual experience in the past. And that's a heavy role, man. Like,
yes,
for me, I feel like I even without knowing, you know, kind of earlier on and, you know, in my experience, without knowing a lot of technical or energetic type things, I definitely had a really strong sense of having a very poignant role in helping my partner to release something, right? And I can recall instances where I had a partner who, you know, had a catharsis, and I asked her about it, and she didn't go into it, you know. Mm-hmm. That was fine. She was able to reach something and touch on something and be able to release it somehow. And I guess this individual didn't feel the need to speak on it. And I've had other relationships with partners who were much more forthcoming with their experiences and so forth. But, you know, as I'm speaking to the males in the audience, you know, the prevalence of sexual abuse is extremely high with males and females. More often than not, guys, you know, you're going to be joining with your partner who's going to be dealing with these issues in some way or another. On some level. And so I would suggest that, you know, perhaps be prepared for that and recognize yourself as a conduit or an assist in your partner's healing. You know, excellent. That's what I would say.
Thank you, Corey. I appreciate that. And thank you, Daisy. That was wonderful. I think we have Claude on the line. Claude, welcome.
Claude.
Hey, brothers. How you doing?
Well, how are you?
Jersey Claude.
Claude from New Jersey, man. How you doing, Corey?
Good, man. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, yeah. In keeping with the subject, I was calling about something else, but about 6 months ago, I found this thing called the Male Sexual Energy Builder Program, and I started playing with it. Mm. And it was holding on to your sexual energy and not releasing it, and circulating it through what they call the microcosmic orbit.
Yep.
Mm.
And then storing it in your dantian, which is just below your navel, about an inch below your navel.
Right.
And storing it in what they call the pearl of compassion. Mm. And I made it, you know, more than a month, a couple different times, and it really is invigorating. And, I mean, it's literally your life force energy. Mm. And when you store it as opposed to releasing it, it gets really powerful where you just, you know, you just feel the energy coursing through your system day after day after day. And it's kind of become a practice of my mind, even though I'm single now, to go, you know, weeks at a time. I mean, it just feels like releasing it is almost becoming like a waste, you know, because you just feel diminished right away. And you're like, wow, why did I do that for?
Mm.
I could just hold on to this vital energy and store it and circulate through my being. So,
that sounds like the Taoist stuff, the microcosmic orbit, as you're saying. It ties in with, you know, Tai Chi and Neigong and, you know, all those internal Asian arts and so forth.
Well, it's interesting you talk about Neigong, Corey, and he talked about the Dantian, because there are multiple Dantians. You have a fire chi reservoir, you have a water chi reservoir, which correspond to the yin and yang. You have the channels at the back. You have the channels around the ribs, up the front. Mm-hmm. Then there's the ancillary meridians, which would be through the arms and feet and so on and so forth. But what it seems like he's describing, the new male sexuality, is that what you called it, Claude?
It's called sexual kung fu or the male sexual energy builder.
That makes sense. Energy builder, because it sounds like you found, or they have found a way, combining a number of different ancient methods to repurpose sustainably the energy. And instead of just building it up like in Tantra, and then when you release, you know, doing like the ceremony or whatever, and then it just gets wasted, it sounds like you have found a way to continue going to a certain extent for a certain duration and repurpose it into your direct physical daily life with the vitality aspect through, it seems like you mentioned, the Pearl of Compassion, which is a node, to my understanding, that connects the two Dantians. So that's super cool. And I would imagine that your health has a lot to do with it, what you're eating, what you're drinking, your diet, supporting those basic hormone and fluid secretion production requirements. Can you speak into a little bit about that, Claude? Because I know last time I spoke with you, you were talking about some sort of diet you were following as well.
Yeah, well, and as you both know, when I met both of you gentlemen a couple of years back, I was struggling with some immune issues and some health, and no longer doing that. So things have really turned around for me in a big way, I hope. What I've been doing is something called a fasting diet. And I love it. The more I do it, I really enjoy it because, you know, we talk about working out and then, you know, you got your body has to rest. Well, this is a diet that twice a week, and I chose Monday and Thursday for my own personal reasons and my own schedule, but twice a week you just eat a very light breakfast and lunch, approximately 500 calories, and then after lunch you just stop eating, and you don't eat for a minimum of 16 hours, which is really not that long because it just means you're basically skipping dinner one night. And then when you go to sleep the next morning, if you, let's say you have lunch at 1 o'clock, your 16 hours would be 5 o'clock the next morning. Mm-hmm. And so it's just water from lunch until, you know, 5 a.m. the next day, and I get up at 6. So I actually take it a little beyond the 16 hours. And then you can have your coffee or whatever. You can even wait to have your coffee and extend the fast. But what I'm experiencing is it's like it's giving your stomach a rest. And time to process, and time to clear, and it just—it's just really starting to feel like my doctor turned me on to it. I have a very progressive doctor, and he mentioned it as you know, this author tied this to studies of longevity, and it seems to me like this is a really great idea because it's also in concert with the way that we all were as hunters and gatherers. I mean, nobody misses the hunt when they go to Whole Foods, you know, but if you go to Whole Foods, you get food every time. You know?
Right, you and they were hungry when they were hunting most of the time, too.
Yeah, guys were hungry, and sometimes the hunt wasn't successful, and so we're kind of designed to have feast and famine, and, you know, we're successful. We have a lot to eat, and then all of a sudden we have to go a day or two without food, so that seems to be the way we came through. So
right, the 3 meals a day is a pretty new phenomena, I would say, in human history.
Agreed.
Yeah,
and it's like working out every day. It's like you just your body is gonna you protest at some point, and it's only been a month, but let me tell you something. This so far, the way it's making me feel, it's fantastic. And tomorrow is my fast day, and I'm actually already starting to look forward to it. I'm saying, wow, okay, tomorrow's fast day, cool. You know, I'll just go with the water and give my stomach a break, and then I'm back at it, you know. So
nice.
Interesting. Yeah, you said this is like 2 days a week.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, that's all right. Go ahead, Corey.
No, I just want to speak to the fasting as it relates to sex. I became a Muslim in the early 90s, so I was a practicing Muslim for a while. And what I discovered in my research, you know, typically the Muslims fast and the Hebrews fast every week, basically, on the Sabbath, right? And then there's Ramadan, where you basically only eat certain hours of the day. Like this 16-hour fast that you're talking about, you know, that's kind of similar to what people do during Ramadan for the whole month.
But in my research, I discovered that the fasting absolutely tied in with the sexuality, right? Because those energy centers are very close, right? Your stomach, your digestive system, your
survival root chakra ties into both of those.
Right, your intestines, right? So another problem that people have, or another sign of like very poor diet or poor eating habits, is a low libido or poor sexual life, because all of that, your guts are pushing up against your sexual organs. And so that kind of was first brought to my attention when I was like, oh, right, the fasting is alleviating pressure not only in the intestines, allowing the body to clean itself out and so on and so forth, but it's so close to the sexual organs that it, you know, in my estimation, that the fasting can actually regulate the sexual energies and the sexual activity, right? It's not irritated, right? It's not irritated or numbed out or imbalanced somehow. It assists in the balancing of the energies in the body.
Yeah, barring outside factors, Corey, that's absolutely correct. And following a logic train to get there, we spoke about the chakra system being controlled in the physical realm by endocrine, the endocrine and the hormonal production. And yes, the stomach and the sexual organs follow the same or similar response because they are both tied into the root chakra for survival.
Right.
So you're absolutely
right.
They do have an effect on one another. And, you know, if there's some sort of other thing going on, they might not see a major improvement. But there should be some sort of improvement in the other areas of their life, all other domains, you know,
just
from the fasting.
Right. Nice.
Cool. Well, Claude, thank you so much for that. That really tied into our show, both the personal health aspect, the energy aspect, and the sexual aspect. That was fantastic. And Corey, your point on that was just wonderful. It's interesting how many different systems the body has that are still affected by each other. It's all tied in. And then, you know, what you would say as a standalone system still operates in a local environment, so it's always going to be affected by the local environment as well. So the separation and the oneness is present in the human body all at once. Does it make sense? The everything, the nothing, the something, just like we keep saying about the universe.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
very
like,
interesting stuff.
The fast cleans out your body, but it also cleans out the toxins in your blood so that your brain functions properly.
And the brain is able to perceive better and release preconceptions that were held on by the toxins and this dumbed down state and the reality, if you will. And then you're able to energetically open up as
Right. And then your brain, and you know, is more receptive to what your heart is telling you or what your gut is telling you.
Excellent.
You know, so yeah, it's the you know, it's all within, man. The kingdom is within, for sure.
Absolutely. And it's funny you say that at the end of the show. We've got about a minute left, but I'm going to go ahead and say that we've wrapped up the sex magic and the alternative energy. We said we're going to do follow-up shows. I think this constitutes that. And we also got to take some calls, so we made those listeners happy as well. Perfect. That was wonderful. So that being said, for next week, I think I want to get into modern-day sorcery, a little bit of Carlos Castaneda's work, his writings and musings about the Mexican sorcerer Don Juan, some of the concepts that they're talking about, like the assemblage points, perception points, threads of reality, lots of really, really interesting things. And then
inorganic beings.
The realm of the inorganic beings.
Mm-hmm.
And then how to apply that type of stuff in your personal life, and maybe mix in some wordsmithing aspects as well. And then if we do have time, I want to touch on orbs as archons. I'm going to bring that back to you again, listeners. Orbs as archons. I know a lot of healing and energy practitioners have some reverence or some, you know, almost mystical value that they ascribe towards seeing orbs during practice or after practice or before practice or anywhere in their lives. I'm not saying all orbs are or bad, but if you look at the descriptions of the Gnostics and what they described, they're describing these little plasmatic, morphable orb energies that are always present around humans, sucking off their energy and trying to display their projected mind into the mind of their victims, which is, you know, that ties into the thoughts aren't your own type deal that we talked about earlier. Okay, so I really want to get into that too. That's a really important aspect because I see a lot of these pictures and a lot of people are like, oh, look, this perfect timing. You know, they're on my Reiki customer or my client. See, my healing is being assisted by these divine beings. Well, yeah, that might be true. But more often than not, are you literally, Corey, reversing every single thing you're doing in real time.
Right.
And allowing the person to feel a very slight physical benefit so they keep coming back. And they also get to feed off of your energy, and they're sucking your energy off while you're healing your client. Mm-hmm. Bing! Take a look at that, guys. See if that's happening for yourself if you do energy healing. That's a really big thing that nobody seems to talk about. So next week, we're going to be doing that. Also, Corey, before we get off the air, I wanted to mention to our listeners, I will be appearing as a guest on the Liberty Talk Radio show, and that will be on May 12th, I believe, at 2 p.m. Central, and I will confirm that on our webpage. We'll actually have on Piercing the Veil a little announcement or a blurb about that so you guys can listen as well. Joe Cristiano, I believe, is the host, and I'm really super excited to speak with him. He's had a lot of really important and powerful people in the U.S. political scene on his web page and his radio show as well. So, Corey, thank you so much, man. Your points are awesome as always. Listeners, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. We'll be back with Modern Day Sorcery. Thank you very much. We'll be right back.